You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Add a berry blast off for your day with the new Berry Pebbles. A berry twist on a classic breakfast. Perfect for giving those growing minds a blast of creativity. With the new Berry Way to Pebbles. Yabba dabba do you with Berry Pebbles. Head to postpebblescereal.com to learn more. Yabba dabba do and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements. Copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
It is the Anfield Wrap Podcast. Neil Atkinson with you. I've got Ian Salmon, Ian Ryan and Adam Smith. We're going to be looking back on Brighton and Hove Albion 2, Liverpool 1, whether we like it or not. That is to come. Although Liverpool have been beaten worse recently at Brighton than the nature of that one, so it shouldn't be the end of the world. We know the ropes by now. Whether or not you do is a separate matter. The Anfield Wrap is brought to you at the moment by Access Sport. They employ industry-leading and highly qualified staff who are active within the sports industry to develop students and prepare them effectively as possible for the rigours of industry. It includes coaches, physios and sports science staff who work at professional academies and teachers who are qualified to a master's level within their fields. There's also tons and tons of technology that they're able to use, and all of this is done by Access Sport in a real world context. It is not classroom learning, although there are classrooms. It's not big buildings, it's out on fields and then back in to the classrooms and going from there. Stuff like VEO cameras are used in order to build up a montage of footage for players to send to clubs and US colleges to help them gain scholarships. If you know anyone at all who may be interested in this, do send them to accesssportscolleges.ac.uk/TAW. If you go to the /TAW part there, you'll be able to request more information. So do point people in that direction. Young people or people responsible for young people, do let them know that this is a possibility for them for the next step forward to motivate and challenge learners and give them the best possible chance of making the best step for them. Right, we are in the room now with Ian, Ian and Adam, and we are dealing with Brighton and Hove Albion 2, Liverpool 1, and Ian Ryan in the cold light today. We'll get into all the little bits and pieces of the performance. In the cold light today, the Liverpool are out of the cup and we won it last season. We all very much enjoyed winning it. It is a blow to wake up this morning out of it. It felt like a 50-50 game on the whole. There's times where Liverpool are in the ascendancy. I think Brighton finished the game stronger than Liverpool, which is part of why they go on and get the injury time winner. It is a kick in the teeth.
Yeah, it is. I think in terms of the first half, I would say Liverpool led you. And they're a bit unfortunate to go in 1-1. You'd have to say that. And I think it's probably backed up in the stats. But then when it gets to the second half, I think Liverpool are okay for about 15. But it always felt to me that there was probably only one team that was going to win it as you start to enter that last 25 minutes, half an hour. And again, I think it's borne out in the stats. You know, Liverpool only have one shot, I think, second half. There's no big chances created. They've got about just over 40% possession, one corner. So they're not doing enough, Neil, for me, second half. And it all feels a little bit like we've seen it before. And I think in the context of the season, and sometimes it's hard to analyse these games because you're on the back of so many poor results now, it all kind of blends into one a little bit. But it is another hammer blow because you find yourself mid-table, out of both domestic cups, and there's going to have to be some upturn in performance to get through in the European Cup.
It's interesting, Ian's point there, Ian Salmon. I feel as though Liverpool have got a number of problems at the moment, but one of the problems I think they've got is I think they sort of struggle to go through the gears a little bit. Like, I thought the framework was there second half until about 70 for Liverpool to play better. I didn't feel like Brighton were particularly hurting Liverpool. And then there's the Solly March chance on about 70 that I think rocks Liverpool back on the heels a little bit. It's the first big chance for either side of the second half. And then I think Liverpool's performance level sort of diminishes from there. It's And that's a shame, because I felt like the second half, Liverpool were just beginning to come to the boil. They were winning the ball higher up the pitch. I thought something's about to come here, something's about to turn. And instead it goes the other way. And I think gears is now on the list of things you feel like this side lacks. I think gears is now one of the things this side lacks.
I think it's definitely not there, obviously. I think it is a case of that, yeah, the Solly Marsh chance. We basically, at that point, our confidence goes again, because they've shown they can get through us again. And we'd managed to restrict them up until that point. And I thought we'd been quite smart by everything. I thought, for a change, when I saw the team, I was hoping to God the Harvey Elliott was going to be on the right-hand side of the front three with Salah down the middle, as we all thought it would have been last week. And he still wouldn't. It still wasn't. But I could see the reason for it, because we were very, very much 4-1, 4-1 for a lot of that game, and 4-5-1 for a great deal of the period as well. And we were keeping everybody fairly deep. And it was about protection, and it was about Gakpo's going to hold the ball up and he's going to bring people into play rather than be an orthodox striker of any kind. So we were looking very much for solidity, I think, more than anything else. It was, again, that idea of limit them, try and keep a clean sheet and see what we come up with, because I think the gears are missing, but the big thing we're missing is any real sense that there's any creativity in the side. We don't look like we can link up with each other. We don't look like there are people making runs to benefit other people. And we don't look like we've got two players who can put three passes together and play somebody into a space that's actually going to be dangerous. We're limiting everybody at the moment, with the exception of a couple of good surging runs that Gakpo made and a couple of cut-ins from Mo on the right. There's not a great deal there for us. And we're relying on flashes and moments of brilliance rather than the actual system to actually work for us. Whereas the system's worked so well for the last few years, at the moment the system needs reinventing. And I thought, first half especially, I looked and went, well, this is the transition. We actually are definitely in transition. No matter what I'd thought before, and no matter how much I thought of it being a blip, you could see that we were in transition. And the transition is the two centre-backs playing like they're playing at the moment, Harvey Elliott being somewhere in the team, Bajatic being present and making everything tick in the middle, because I thought he was absolutely excellent. I thought we were good. I thought as a team we were good and we were solid, and all we need to do was get that bedrock there and then start adding the creativity again. Now it feels like we might be going one step back again.
It does feel a little bit back to square one, Adam, and I think the confidence, it's interesting to what Robertson speaks about post-match. You know, he leads the team out of the first place there, and he talks afterwards about confidence. And I thought you got to see that both whilst Liverpool were at 0-0. I thought you got to see it at 1-0, and I thought you got to see it, obviously, at 1-1 as the game wears on, that just in little moments, they're not backing each other, they're not making the right run. I think the lack of creativity thing is as much what someone's not doing is showing in a really positive way to get the ball through to them or something like that. Instead, they're all still playing a little bit safe, because if this goes wrong, we need to go back to being solid. We need to get that bedrock back that Ian refers to. And I think in the end, this becomes a bit of a funny game, where I think in the end, the one thing I will say for why Brighton, you know, if they deserve to shade it, I think they deserve to shade it, because I think they're more willing to risk getting beat in order to try to win the game than they are than the Liverpool were, where I think by the time he gets to about 70, by the time March has that chance, Liverpool are just thinking, you know what, if we can just get out of here now with a draw, we'll all be all right about that. And I think you got to see that between the two teams.
Yeah, when we did the tour live on Friday, you asked the question about whether people would take 0-0, and we had a bit of a sort of conversation about it, because Dan said that he wouldn't. And we had a sort of a bit of a back and forth, because he said he'd take a win, and I was like, well, of course I'd take a win. I mean, I don't know if that was an option. That was the sort of conversation we had. And the point that I was making was that my big thing is that losing would feel massive, and just taking the 0-0 and knowing that you're still in the hat and knowing that you haven't lost is another step along the road of these baby steps that we've been taking to building back confidence again. And I think part of that is that it almost felt like that was what the players were thinking as well, was that, you know, yeah, they wanted to win. They went 1-0 up and then they went to 1-1. And that the 1-1 is such a moment where they must have just been looking at each other and being like, this is just our pissing luck at the minute. Like, we cannot catch a break. The ball is not bouncing for us at all. And then they go, they play well for a spell in the second half. They could have found a winner, but they didn't. And so I think there was then it just started to creep in of, we don't lose, we do not lose. And you can imagine the manager, Robertson as captain, saying that before the game at halftime, we do not lose. That's the overriding factor. whenever that's your thing, fear then immediately becomes the overriding factor. It just does. So you can't play with confidence. You can't play a risky ball because you think, well, what if my risky ball is the one that leads to them hitting us on the break and then we're in all sorts
of
trouble?
And that's why I think the March chance is really significant because it is a break. I think Liverpool would almost maybe have dealt with it a little bit better if there'd been 3 minutes of Brighton pressure, say a set piece, and he misses a good chance off the back of the set piece. I think part of why it rocks them to the extent, and I genuinely do think they are really rocked by it, I think it rocks them to the extent that it does, is it means they have a motivational reason to go, we get even more compact, but the better way to do that is to go deeper.
Yeah, and you know, Ian said it before, that March chance was a big moment for everybody losing the confidence and losing what had been built up. And I think how it comes about, what happens, sort of, I said after the match that I thought every sub made us weaker, and when I reflected on it, I thought actually that's not fair, because for a time when Jordan Henderson and Darwin Nunez came on, we looked much better. Actually, it was the Jones and the Fabinho subs that made us weaker. And I think when you're then, everyone's looking around, and I think that the players will have thought that as well, because all of a sudden they had a degree of solidity that kind of disappeared. So remaining confident when you're, maybe confident isn't even the right word, not being nervous when you're then starting to concede chances, and as you say, on the counter rather than over sustained pressure, it's inevitable that you're going to be like, shit, we weren't supposed to lose this. Now I think we might end up losing this, because we're done. Like, we just feel, everyone just feels shaky, and it's a major problem at the minute, I think.
Can I just throw in a question there? Did losing it feel massive to you? Because it didn't to me. I just thought, well, that was a bit shit, wasn't it? It didn't feel like a massive moment. It just felt like, well,
it did to me, on account of the fact that it felt like everything we'd been kind of, the little baby steps, the tiny little bits of confidence we got from the last two games had disappeared, and I felt a lot like, and we're but look, never ever write Liverpool off, of course not. But I think we're not going to win any silverware this. I think the FA Cup was our best chance of silverware. So that was a big hit for me.
I'm inclined to agree, but I also think that what we did 70 minutes, Klopp can get them onto a training pitch this week and go, look what you did for 70 minutes. And that be the most important part of that game.
But I think that's we know that the manager's good at this sort of stuff, Ian, and I'm with that 100%, and that I actually think they've had a good week, if you see what I mean, because I thought that the shape was better. Out of possession, I thought that was, Brighton weren't able to play through as they had. They did occasionally, because they've got really good players. I mean, it helps when you've got Matoma, as an example. You know, it's easier to play football a certain way if you've got Matoma. I think March is in good shape at the minute. A couple of others in there who I've always been impressed with. But in the cold light today, I think it might well, last night I was all right about it. I've woken up this morning, it may just be the aftermath of the whole afternoon. But I woke up this morning just having taken it a little worse. And I think the reason why is, as Adam says, partially just not being in the hat and the idea and not getting the silverware. But I think also, ultimately, they both deserved to get something from it and feel as though it crowns the good week. Yep. But also, they deserved not to get anything from it, because they had ended up showcasing this fear that we're talking about as well. And this is everything is so fragile at the moment, I think, with them. The idea that they've shown the weakness and then being punished for the weakness is a problem. They almost could have done with getting away with one, if you know what I mean, where they were then able to look at it and still be in the hat, but also we'll have a bit of a chat and say, all right, this is how we work this out. But we did all right for 70.
But the weakness that we then show isn't necessarily going to be a weakness of the lads who start in midfield on the next game. Because we changed the entire midfield, and they can look and go, that wasn't you, that's not on you.
That's fair.
Not that it'll play a blame game of any kind, but they can look and then go, that's not on you three.
One of the positives, again, and the small positives, I'm certainly not getting carried away, but I felt as though you got to see from Gakpo in the round what he could offer us, Ian. I think there's a minor problem, which he's arguably at his most influential prior to the point Nunez gets on. Again, there's not quite crossover where Gakpo feels full hit on the one hand and Nunez is on the pitch on the other. I don't think that quite happens. And I'm not that concerned about the idea of them getting in each other's way a little bit. That'll sort itself out. But I think that you got to see again perhaps what it is over the fullness of time here, what Gakpo could offer this Liverpool side.
Yeah, I think there was more green shoots, wasn't there? And I think, I've said on other shows, I have felt really sorry for them coming into this, because I don't think it'd have been easy for anyone. And obviously he's a footballer that's come to a new country. You know, it's a bit of a steep learning curve. Liverpool play a certain way, or you certainly, you know, used to see us play a certain way where it might feel difficult for players to adjust. But even in this period of time, it would feel hard to adjust because of everything that's going on, the system not quite being right. So I think it's been a big ask, and he's obviously come in where he's had to play because there's been injuries to other players. But I thought against Brighton there were one or two shoots where you can see how it kind of maybe could make sense in the future. I think he maybe lacks a little bit of pace, although you do see him second half maybe get away from one or two where you're thinking, oh, well, okay, I can see this.
Dunk takes the booking, but then we don't get to dunk enough afterwards, and that's one of the things that annoys you in the end is we've shown your vulnerability there. He's a clever player, Dunk, I think. You know, he doesn't want to engage, but when he has to, he's prepared to do that. And then we don't expose that vulnerability again. It is a frustrating thing.
I think it is frustrating, but I think, you know, the whole way Liverpool are managing games at the minute it's hugely frustrating, and we're all talking here about, you know, Solly Marsh has that chance and then all of a sudden we become fragile. Jesus Christ, how far we've fallen. And then all of a sudden the team has a chance and these mentality monsters who have been lauded for going so close and for picking up trophies, all of a sudden we're that fragile where we fall apart on the back of an opponent having an opportunity. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true, by the way, but if that is the case, that is some fall, that. That is some fall. And, you know, it shows how much work's got to be done if Liverpool have got to climb up from, you know, someone having a chance and all of a sudden they're on the floor. I think, you know, I was okay with the first half yesterday because I think sometimes it's hard to analyse these games because you are looking at the whole context of what's gone on before it, and, you know, there's been a lot of defeats and poor performances. But they did look more solid. And I think the game against Wolves, the game against Chelsea yesterday, you can see where the structures suddenly become a little bit more solid and teams aren't quite playing through as they were previously. But I think you see in the second half, we're not able to maybe get Darwin Nunes into the game. We don't look like we're going to score a goal. You know, we have that chance first half where Mohamed Salah's got to do better. He just has to do better. In these moments of adversity, your big performers have got to come to the party and they've got to put those chances away. Let's have it right. So it all just feels like a bit of a muddle. And I thought, you know, the manager's comments after the game, which I'm sure we'll get on to later, were interesting, where, you know, it doesn't appear that Liverpool are going to try and fix any of this by dipping into the market.
On Gakpo, Adam, he throws in 30 pressures across the 90 according to StatsBomb, makes him the highest Liverpool player, highest player on the pitch, highest Liverpool player by some distance. I think it's 12 more than the nearest, which was Salah with 18. I felt like he understood the press a little bit more. I think it's part of why Liverpool nearly get in. He commits a couple of fouls. I'm not against that. I'm absolutely fine with it because he thinks the ball's there to be won on a couple of occasions. It's part of what that role, if he is going to play that role or a role like that role, will entail, is him understanding when he needs to go and being part of that with everyone. Again, I thought that was good news. We just could do with getting to see him be able to deliver some end product on top of all that. I'm hopeful that'll come pretty soon, but, you know, we could do with that. But the flip side is, I think he gets to, for instance, have gone to bed last night and feel as though he did a decent job for Liverpool.
He will, and he should, and that's great on the one hand. On the other hand, I think it feels a little bit like the manager has stopped being pragmatic. And what I mean by that is, Gakpo was... we've signed him based on him playing on the left. That's basically what he did the majority of the time in Holland. He's come out and said himself, I like to play on the left. The manager point blank refused to play Harvey Elliott anywhere other than on the right for, what, a year and a half, whatever it was. Point blank refused to play him anywhere. And most, you know, in terms of output, Mo Salah's best work has been in the middle. He's teaching Gakpo to play that, you know, that kind of Bobby Firmino role, if you like. We don't... That almost feels like a sort of... He's doing that for Gakpo's future Liverpool career. But we need results right now. We need stuff going on right now. And I feel like the manager has stopped making what is the pragmatic, sensible decision. And the pragmatic, sensible decision right now would have been to put Gakpo on the left, Salah through the middle, and Elliott on the right. And you can see that because Elliott's goal basically comes from him being on the right. Salah's the big chance that Ian was talking about before came from him being through the middle. And in those moments where they'd all shifted position a little bit because we were hitting, you know, kind of a little bit on the counter and all that sort of thing, that was kind of what happened. What I just don't... it's genuinely great that we are seeing these green shoots, as Ian said, as you've mentioned, of what Gakpo can do and how he's learning the role and what he's producing and all that, and that's fab. But at the moment, he basically seems to be like the human manifestation of that gif of the fella walking into the apartment with the pizza boxes and everything's on fire. Like, he's sort of going, well, I've done my presses there, and everyone's going, no, but the entire team is on fire. Why does it matter that he's done his press? I'm really frustrated at the moment with the decisions that the manager's making. And he wasn't pragmatic over the midfield for ages and ages and ages. And then he's finally turned around and gone, okay, I'll be pragmatic over the midfield. I'll play Keita. I'll play Bacicic and whatever by Chetitz. I'll play Thiago. I'll put them both three in. And we looked so much better with those three in as soon as he started being pragmatic. But for months he was refusing to, and we kept losing games stupidly. And then now he's kind of gone, okay, I'll be pragmatic in the midfield, but I'm still going to go mental with the front three and do what I want with it, even though it makes no sense to what I've been doing in all other occasions. And I just don't understand I don't know what the long-term aim is. I'm just not sure. Like, I remember when we signed Gakpo, you guys did an interview with somebody, I can't remember who it was, but an interview with somebody, and he was saying, oh, you'll see, you know, quite a lot of Gakpo on the left putting the ball in for Nunez. You know, that's what you'll see working really well, because that's what Gakpo's brilliant at. And then when Nunez comes on, he's in the left and Gakpo's still in the centre. And I don't know. I'm finding myself increasingly frustrated with decisions from the manager that I just don't understand. I don't have to understand them. I'm an idiot, but I just don't
get it.
But do
you think that's what the long-term aim is?
For what? For Gakpo to be on the left?
No. I think you're frustrated. I think I take your frustration in a short-term pragmatic sort of point of view, and I'm you know, I can hear that and I understand that. But we've seen the manager shift positions of footballers before. You know, a number of footballers play in a different place when they end up coming to Liverpool under this manager. And I think whether it ends up being as part of something that might look at times like a midfield diamond, or something that might look at times like a midfield three, but Gakpo's in there, or something that might look at times like in a sort of false nine-ish position. I think that he is doing his long-term aim. Like, I think this is, so I think this is the long-term, he's showing you what this is the long-term aim, where Salah and Nunez come narrower through the middle. Gakpo sits the deeper of the three. Someone plays there, whether it's Gakpo, whether it's Diaz, as I think it may well end up being some of the time as well, whether it's Jota or whether it's Firmino, but someone's playing there. Those two are coming narrow there, and there's a bit of rotation. Like, So my point is, I understand your short-term frustration, because we might get more results doing it a different way for now, but I think long-term, this is the way in which he sees it.
You might well be right, absolutely. And obviously, we don't know. Only the manager and his team will know what the kind of plan is, and maybe that is it. But the thing of, you know, always he's used people in different ways before, absolutely. You know, we've seen it time and again. You know, Gini Wijnaldum is maybe the best example of it, of where he's taken a player that we would expect to be one way and used them totally differently. But that has typically been in teams that were functioning and that were
all
working
after the summer
already.
And with a pre-season.
Exactly, with a pre-season, with a time to work with them, but it just feels like this is kind of, yeah, okay, this is what I might do next season, so I'll start doing it now, but nothing else is working. No other bits are in place. So why concentrate on that one thing where you could go, okay, well, right now, he will bed in quicker and he will feel happier as a player if we let him play in his natural position of where he sees it, on the left. Mo Salah is in atrocious form. He's stinking the place out, but he's on the periphery of everything. Give him three chances where he had, like the one Ian was referencing before, that he misses. He scores one of them, at least, maybe two. But he had one chance through the whole match, and that was it, and he messed it up. So, because what's he doing out on the, stuck out right on the, because he isn't really coming in narrower. So if that is the long-term plan, he's not doing it yet enough to make it worthwhile right now. So it just feels very much like, what are we doing? It's like a halfway house where we're not doing anything completely. We're doing everything a little bit, and none of it's working.
I think you're right on the halfway house side of things. I think the other thing I was going to throw in right away was Ray Canty was a double winning centre forward, and we bought him and we converted him immediately. He became one of the best midfielders we had, and I think that's what we're seeing. I think as supporters, we're stuck in the pragmatism of the now. We're stuck in the need to win games now, because all we have is now. We don't know anything that's gone on in the last 3 weeks behind the scenes. We don't know what's going on in June behind the scenes. We have no idea what's happening at all. All we have is now. So we're stuck in the need to win games immediately because we want the immediate win. And I think Jürgen is in this point where he's going to reinvent the team. He's said in the Michael Calvin interview, as Michael Calvin said, his big thing now is to do the second team. And he's got to start building it somewhere. And I think balancing out the need that it looks like when people said that Pep Linders was talking about Gakpo as the missing link, we didn't know what he meant. And what he means is the Bobby Firmino for the next 8 years. Mm. That's what he means is the missing link. He's literally going to be the link man. So that ball he receives in the centre and plays a fantastic ball out for Salah to run onto on the wing early on in the first half. That could well be his job. It's not what we thought of as a winger. But then you're stuck with this weirdness, though. Yeah, as I said, it was a lot of 4-1-4-1. And at the point where Jones came on, Darwin became an orthodox left winger in a 4-4-2 for about 2 minutes. And you're going, I don't know what the bloody point of that is. I really don't understand that. But at that point, you suddenly had Salah go more central as a more orthodox two. I can't even remember who was playing alongside him at the time. I assume it was still Gakpo, but I can't remember for the life of me. But you've got this weirdness where we bring Darwin on, and because we're doing the 4-4-5-1 for want of less syllables, because we're doing that, he's not going to get as near to Gakpo as you would want. So Salah's not going to get as near to Gakpo as you would want, because it's not that three that we're used to seeing, or a one, the two, and a diamond. So we are trying to reinvent the player, but if he wants the players to do that next season, then the reinvention has to start now. There's no point playing them on the left now and then reinventing them in June. Especially if, you know, the season's basically gone and what we're looking for is top four and hopefully getting past Real as a start. Reinvent the lad now so next season he hits the ground running. That's the only thing I can see that can make any sense.
But what makes that difficult to watch, Ian, and I think this is sort of Adam's point to come over to Ian Ryan, is that you watch inside at the minute, it just looks short of creativity. You know, and that is, again, I think that the shape's right. I think Elliot, left-hand side, made a little bit more sense, and obviously it always helps if you score. If you score, then we all get to go, well, yeah, there we are. You know, that's that. You know, there's no shadow of a doubt on that. And he has another opportunity as well, Elliot, where he takes a wonderful first touch and then a second, which belies the quality of the first touch in there as well, and doesn't quite manage to get his shot off. But that is a one-on-one with the keeper that we've managed to engineer there.
Might just be offside, I don't want to think, possibly.
You never know. Yeah. You never know, because he does stick in the back of the net, it doesn't get looked at again.
But and it was Elliot's ball for Salah as well.
It was Elliot's ball for Salah. And I think that it's easier in that sense for Elliot, where he gets to play in moments a little bit at the moment. So I understand why the manager's using him. I'm glad he didn't move him back into midfield when he makes the subs. I'm sure he considered that and decided against it, because I think at the minute letting Elliot play in moments is good. But then the flip side of that is Liverpool just looks short of creativity, and you've got to... I'm happy enough with the shape for 70, pretty much. I'm happy enough with the shape with what you got to see in that regard for 70, but you're not going to get to relax in these games if you don't start taking them away from your opponents, and the only way you take them away from your opponents is to create opportunities and take them.
Yeah, and I think on the Elliot thing, I know he does take his goal well, as Adam says, it's from the right-hand side, he moves across, and I looked at his average position on the pitch, and he does end up kind of tucking in an awful lot, so he's not kind of playing, you know, loads left-hand side. And I think, you know, that helps with Liverpool being compact and stuff. But yeah, it's just hugely frustrating, Neil, because I absolutely take the point around what the lads have just said there, you know, short term versus long term. I mean, I always come back to, and I've said it on other shows, you know, when you are recruiting from a position of strength, it's not helped with some of this in terms of embedding players and letting them settle and all that kind of stuff, because the minute you're kind of thrusting them into an environment where it's not settled and it's completely unsettled, then you are caught between, you know, rocking a hard place, essentially. And what is the manager going to do? You know, there is a long-term thing here where he will want to make sure we are transitioning, and then actually next season it looks better. But there's still half a season to play. There's games to be won here. And what are we saying? Are we in the habit of writing seasons off? I mean, I'd argue that. And you keep reminding people on shows, there's 20 games to go, you know. There's 19 games to go, you know. There's 18 games to go, you know. And it just feels like we've almost written this season off. And when I say we, you know, I very much kind of, I'm holding the owners to some of this as well. But, and listen, Klopp might have to take some of the blame, and he's not had a great season, I understand that. But it just feels like we could have done a lot more earlier in the window to maybe help us with some of this. And I think it now feels like we have almost written the season off, and we're sitting in, what are we, ninth? A long way behind the top four. There's the Real Madrid game on the horizon. Listen, not always the best team wins the European Cup. We know that more than anyone. but we are going to have to see a massive difference in terms of managing games and managing performances to suddenly find ourselves in the latter part of that competition.
But this is why I feel as though he's playing for time a little bit, Ian, and that's hard to watch at the minute. I'm not saying it isn't hard to watch, but I feel as though, and I actually think the replay could well have helped him continue to play for time in a number of different ways, because I think there's every chance that the rearranged game now will either go in the week of the replay or the fifth round of the FA Cup or both. So, you know, I think that Liverpool have almost wanted to push the potential league games back.
Chelsea game, will it?
Or Wolves. We've still got to play. Wolves home was rearranged as well, so it could be either. Neither Wolves nor Chelsea are still in the FA Cup, so the scope for both is what I'm saying. But I think there is a thing of playing for time, and people don't like to hear that sort of thing when you're watching the games of football, but I think he'll think, good enough week there, training ground. Another good week next week, training ground. Let's get a result at Molineux. Then it's 9 days to Everton, unless something gets dropped in, to have another good week, training ground. And also, players getting closer and closer to being back from injury and all that sort of stuff. I think that will be in his mind. Don't get me wrong. So I don't think they are writing it off. And I think it is 19 league games to go. But I think at the minute we're having to watch something, which is very much, right, we just need to get through this bit here and get some new stuff working for us.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And listen, against Brighton, not having Nunes from the start, I think hurts them, because I think he's a ridiculous outball because of his pace. And, you know, whether you play him through the middle or left-hand side, you know, you can see a case for both. And even if he goes through the middle, he'll probably pull left-hand side because he likes to be out there and stuff. And he, on his day, can cause loads and loads of problems, and it can all of a sudden bail it out of shit as well. If you've got a fast forward who can just get on the end of things and cause havoc, yeah, it can mask all kinds of other problems and stuff. But not having him then changes the way we play and stuff. And I think in terms of the midfield, he's, I wouldn't say stumbled across something, but all of a sudden playing Keita by Cetic.
But Keita was great, by the way, Thiago, while he was on.
And when Keita goes off, and I've at times criticised him, mainly for not being available enough, but I think Liverpool go worse when Keita leaves the pitch. And I think having his legs and his ability maybe to pass forward a little bit more has helped. I think Bajčetić, for his age, has done ever so well. You know, Thiago, I think the stats bear out that he's doing an awful lot. You know, he's had some good games, he's had some poor performances recently, I think it's fair to say as well. But it shines a big light on Henderson and Fabinho in terms of their performances have just been an absolute mile off. And I'm someone who, listen, I think Fabinho's been on the slide for a while now. I think Jordan Henderson, I think he has the period for England where he looks pretty good with legs around him. And I've loved Henderson, I really have. But I think it's fair to say, over the last 12 months, he has not been anywhere near it. He just hasn't. And there's been the odd game, of course, because there'll always be the odd game for these footballers, because they are still good players. But he's just not been anywhere near it. And I think now you are looking at a midfield that, listen, they may come in for certain games, but I think the manager's made it clear that those three at the minute are his go-to three in the middle of the park.
On Keita, I think where he impresses over the course of the game is he's clever when he goes, both in and out of possession. I think both go really, really well for him. It's almost I want to come on to Fabinho as a separate thing in a minute or two, because I think that, for instance, I think Henderson does perfectly well out of possession. I think the shape's good, the press is good. Don't think he's close enough to win in a couple of them, but you can see where they are. But then I feel as though he's likelier to be more risk-averse when he gets on the ball, because I think he's feels as though he's got something to protect. You know, when I'm talking before about the risk and reward thing, Ian. Whereas I think Keita's, not least because of the contract situation, almost ironically, I think he's able to play with a little bit more freedom. He's able to decide, well, we're going to go forward a little bit quicker in this way. I'm really pleased with Keita's performance, and I think it's, I'm fine with the manager taking him off as well, I hasten to add, because I think I'd rather he was doing it that way round than the idea of bringing lads on with 60. I'd rather take lads off on 60 and do the cotton wool bit that way, because I think part of why he takes Keita off is because I think Keita's starting against Wolves, and I'm absolutely fine with that.
I think, yeah, you've got to manage Keita. I think we've all seen enough of him now to understand.
And you've got to manage Thiago a little bit as well.
And you've got to, although Thiago just feel like he's played an awful lot of football at the minute, but I think in Keita's case, We've all seen what's happened over the last kind of four or five years. He misses too many football matches. So I think where they can try and pinch 30 minutes, 20 minutes here and there, they're going to do that to protect him and look after him, because I don't think he's lived up to anywhere near the expectations. You know, let's be fair and frank about it. But in terms of where we are right now, he'd be starting most league games, most cup games.
I mean, I'm starting with Wolves, no shadow of a doubt.
If he's available, because all of a sudden he's covering the ground, and Liverpool are able to, you know, for all the issues we can point at, in terms of the structure, in terms of closing off space, in terms of looking more compact and not allowing teams just to play one straight ball through the middle, it all of a sudden feels a lot better. So we.
It's not like anyone's answered Boxing Day, Keita. And no. There's a key thing, you know, when he's been coming off the bench. Yeah, I was that. That's why one of the reasons I was desperate to see him start a bit earlier. You know, I don't think he's let anyone down since Boxing Day. And I think that should be sort of borne in mind here. And the other minor fear that given the contract situation, he might contemplate down in tools. You've not seen that either. He would be absolutely on the team sheet for me against Wolves, no shadow of a doubt. We're going to have to talk about Fabinho. Adam, come to you first. Go around everyone. It's a dreadful. The passage of play and the run-up to where he does the really, really bad tackle, which is probably a red card. He's really poor all the way through it. It's almost like from the minute he comes on, you know, and I was saying I wouldn't mind seeing him start with Bacicic played further forward in this one. And then you see that, and I can't work out what that is at this point in terms of a cameo. You know, is this a footballer absolutely so devoid of confidence, so devoid of everything within himself? His demeanour all the way through, the manager talks about body language afterwards, and you know, just what we got to see on the telly in that brief section around the bad tackle and so on. I think he really does a number on Liverpool in a way in which I'm trying to think of. I've always laughed that there's a terrible Milner sub appearance at the Derby in 1819 where he comes off the bench, and him, Firmino's pretty bad. He comes on at the same time, but Milner's absolutely dreadful. But even that's almost chalk and cheese, because Milner's dreadful, but almost in a bubble of his own dreadfulness. It felt to me like Fabinho, in every single facet, just scared the life out of his teammates on top of everything else. It was like, it's tough enough, this coming to Brighton, they're a decent side at the minute, and now we've got to deal with this fella. I thought it was mad. I genuinely think, I can't think of a comparison, honestly, I can't, from watching Liverpool for 35 years. I cannot think of an equivalent.
No. It was so bad, but it was almost the culmination of what we've seen in dispatches for the past 6 months, 8 months, maybe longer. You know, he's not been good for quite some time. It infected the rest of the team in a way where, you know, obviously I don't think any of us here work in a proper serious like office environment. But if you did and you were having a meeting with the boss, and one of your colleagues turned up pissed, you would just be a little bit like, okay, we don't speak to him at all, but we've kind of got to because he's in the room and he's interrupting all the time to say weird things. Like, that was almost like, it was like he was pissed and everyone was like, don't pass to him. Oh, you've passed him. Oh, God, he's raked his leg down somebody else's. Like, it was so wild. Maybe, you know, because his wife's had a baby recently. There's all sorts of things that go on with that, with sleep deprivation and stuff like that, isn't there? Maybe he's going through his own little, I don't know, you know, things at home with that. It was so bad that you're sort of like, well, let's hope we never see him again now. Like, that's how bad it was, because it was the, as I say, the culmination of what we've been seeing for quite a while. Actually, so I think the thing with the Milner one was it was bad kind of out of context. It was kind of, he came on and yeah, we were all like, oh wow, okay, that's a really atrocious
I'm able to use that as an example. There are other examples that are like that. For subs, because it's hard to be a sub.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't get the pace of the game. Sometimes it just doesn't go for you. There's coming on and being a sub and finding it hard and having a stinker, that's fine. This is that was just something else, yeah. And that's why it's almost difficult to discuss, not least because we are talking here about a Liverpool great.
Yes.
And that's a really important point. This is a lad who comes in, Liverpool get 97 points and win the European Cup, and then the following season they get 99 points, and yeah, he's a massive part of all of that. This fella is, and he's a massive part of last season as well. It's interesting what we're talking about last season. You say, you know, for 8 months you're not sure about Fabinho, for 12 months Ian's not sure about Henderson. Well, they didn't have to do well under those circumstances last year then to win those cups and get to all that, you know, to get those finals and to get that many points. My point here is that there's, you know, we're talking here about, just to stick to Fabinho for a second, a genuine Liverpool great.
Yeah.
And I won't have a word said against that. And that's one of the reasons why it genuinely does feel a bit like, you know, to sort of take your metaphor, it's like everyone's looking at everyone else like, what's this?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think the thing is that I think I'm right because it was my opinion. But, you know, I think Ian's right as well on Henderson over the period of time. It's a little bit like when you play the kids in an FA Cup game or something like that, and or maybe not an FA Cup game, league game, whatever, where you can have one and you can sort of carry them. You can have two, you can kind of get away with it. Once you've got three or four, the whole team suffers because of it. I think that maybe there were times last year when Henderson was off it a little bit, but Fabinho was playing okay. Fabinho was off it a little bit, but Henderson was playing okay. At the moment, we're trying to carry everyone all at the same time almost, because Salah's not there. So, you know, we're sort of everybody's struggling, and then Fabinho has just dived off a cliff in terms of his form and performances. I cannot, off the top of my head, remember the last time he played well. It certainly, I don't think it was been this season. But as I say, the Milner one kind of came out of
nowhere. I thought he was all right at Brentford when it was all going wrong around him. I thought he was all right at Brentford.
But is all right?
Yeah.
That's fair. That's the thing, isn't it? And that's so, yeah, the Milner one, it was sort of out of context. And previously you were like, oh, that was a bit of a shot. The Fabinho one, it wasn't out of context. It's been, no one was there going, I cannot believe how poor Fabinho is today. Everyone's sort of going, I can't believe how poor Fabinho has been for ages, and this is the worst he's been within all of that.
And this is it. So Adam's alluded to it there. So when you say they've maybe not been hitting the heights for the last 12 months, 18 months, that's not saying every week they've stunk the gaff out. That's just they're not hitting those levels and they're not delivering consistently. So when I talk about Henderson, for instance, and as I say, I've gone to war many a time on the internet over Jordan Henderson. He's been great for the club on and off the pitch. But there's no doubt in my mind he is not performing, and it's probably down to age, a lot of this. And he's played an awful lot of football. Look at the stats last season, it's ridiculous amounts of football. Eventually that catches up with you. The Fabinho one, which I keep coming back to, is, and I think it's shocked the fans, I think it's shocked the manager, the kind of coaching staff, is that he's only 29. And yes, he's played a lot of football over the last, two, 3 years, of course, because he's been pivotal to what Liverpool are trying to do. But it's the fact that he's dropped off so much, when you're still thinking he should have another 2-3 years at the very highest level in terms of playing that role and stuff. I think there have been games where he's been okay. After the World Cup, I thought he looked all right. You saw signs of maybe Fabinho, once he getting back to his best, but he was above the level he is now. But then the performance at the weekend when he comes on, and I heard you, Neil, on some of the post-match stuff, his reaction after he's done that, it's ridiculous. I mean, talk about a guilty man. I mean, if you just looked at him, you'd have fucking sent him off, wouldn't you? Because he's almost like that. Take me off. Honestly, I can't believe what I've done there. I think you named a few people there. If you make that challenge, all right, listen, you don't want to make that challenge. Just fucking get up and walk away. And you crack on, you go and see the lad at the
play
end of the game.
Play with your socks, play with your shin pads.
Go and
look,
see
look
the lad
your
at
feet.
The end of the game. Yeah. I'd apologise to him. But the way he reacted was just, as I say, I thought it was probably quite telling in terms of where he is at the minute, mentally. He just looks like a lot of them do. He looks fragile, he looks a little bit weak, and you know that probably plays into the manager's selection and stuff. But actually, when he's on the pitch and when he's starting football matches, you know, bar the odd game, he is just a million miles off it. He's not able to cover the ground, he's not able to get close to players. And that's a big problem for Liverpool, and I think it's caught them. It's caught a lot of them, certainly the manager, I think, by surprise, just how quick that drop-off. And maybe there were signs last season, but not to this extent.
I'm old enough to have questioned Souness and Dalglish as to whether they peaked and whether we should have moved them on by now and been proved entirely wrong by both of them. I think Fabinho's gone. I don't think it's there anymore. I'd love to be proved wrong on this one as well, but I don't think he's the player he was 12 months ago by any stretch of the imagination. And I think the weekend might have been the lowest point of probably of his career in terms of performances, because to come on and be that bad, the fact that he does the lad, and his face is the face of a player who thinks he's just finished another player's career. He's looking at it going, he looked absolutely physically sick about that, which probably means he's a decent human being and he felt bad about fouling him, but he then looked like that for about the next 5 minutes and just wandered around. It was a face that went, just look, take it to VAR, give me the red card, I know what's coming. And when he's still on the pitch, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing there anymore, because he's not supposed to be, because it is clearly a red card. But
everything in the build-up to that moment, Ian, I mean, it's not just that moment. That moment crowned what was going on. It wasn't the catalyst, it was the symptom, more than it was the catalyst, if you see what I mean.
Well, I think it was the crowning moment of it. I think it's the result of everything that's happened for the last year, because he's not quick enough to the ball anymore, he's not quick enough to anything anymore. And I think he knows it. He must know it. You know, any athlete must know. It does look like a player whose legs have completely gone on our watch for a change. And it's a shocking fall, because 18 months ago, he's absolutely world class. And he's had good moments. And as you said, he's taken us to two trophies because he was the sole individual in the middle. But there's also that moment, the thing that we're not talking about with him is the fact that he has quietly picked up quite a few injuries over the last 3-4 years. And he's been out for like a couple of stretches at a time each season. We don't know how much that's told on him. We don't know how bad those injuries have been in terms of long-term knocks that he's going to carry for, you know, possibly the rest of his life in terms of his physicality. It just might be that he's pushed it too far and he can't get there anymore.
In the defence, to sort of sum up and move on to talk about the transfers, Ian Ryan, I think that there's a couple of things they could do with doing. One is scoring when they're on top, creating a couple of chances when they're on top. That doesn't happen second half. Again, I'll go back to Lewis Dunkertuck and Gakpo. Gakpo's run at the back four. He's got options either side. Up to any, I think there was definitely a universe where he could have just gone himself as well. A couple of little bits and pieces I think they could do with that. One, two, they could do with a bit of luck for them and not against them. You know, and I think that's there in the equaliser, the goal that makes it 1-1. That's the present as well. This is part of how you build confidence. I think they've done a couple of clean sheets. This is different, obviously. It's a fortuitous goal and then an injury time goal, but there were a couple of other opportunities for Brighton in there as well, so let's be clear. They could just almost just find a way to get in a 2-0. They could do with playing 15 minutes of football 2-0 up. It's sort of where I think they are at the minute. They could just do with that happening for them. A couple of opportunities on the horizon there, Wolves away and Everton at home. Two opportunities where hopefully they manage to get themselves into a position where they score when they're playing well. They then maybe score again when they're playing well and they get to manage a game a little bit, because I think that's what they could do with in terms of building confidence. They could do with the scoreboard pressure being on their side for once.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at the Wolves game and I think it'll be a tough match. And then obviously Everton, you know, you're thinking, well, that's got potential. Of course it has. But then they changed the manager, and I'm not saying Sean Dyche is the greatest manager out there, of course, but he probably will all of a sudden make them far more
robust. You can tell they could frustrate you.
And more solid than what they've been under Lampard, I think that's fair to say. And you obviously tend to, not always, but you tend to maybe get a bit of a bounce where, you know, you'll just maybe put an extra 5 or 10% in and that can play out in the performance. And all of a sudden, what looks like a game that you should be quite comfortable in can be a tricky fixture. But you're right, Neil, they don't really look capable of managing performances like that anymore. And that's why, you know, a lot of the players are still there. A lot of the same lads who we've lauded and have got this mentality and, you know, they've gone to the top of the mountain and they've lifted the big trophies. They're still there. And yet there's this fragility that just seems to have gone right through the team now, where it's hard to kind of point to anyone and go, well, you can rely on him. Because even your big performers, and you know, he's not in the team at the minute, so listen, you can't go in too hard on him in terms of the weekend because he wasn't playing. But even the likes of Virgil and people like that, they've not quite been at the level and they've looked a little bit more fragile, you know, top end of the pitch. You know, Mohamed Salah, class as permanent, of course, and he'll come back, no doubt about it. But he's not been on his best this season, and no one can tell me otherwise. And there's mitigation, of course, and you can talk about system and service and setup, delivery, all that stuff. I get it, but big moments have happened this season where Salah's been through on goal and he's not tested a goalkeeper and he's put it wide, and there's a number of them now. So you are looking at your big footballers to step up in these moments and maybe just drag one or two with them, but that doesn't seem to be happening. And as I say, they've had an opportunity to go and look at the transfer market, and the manager can come out and say things at the end of games where he can talk about the squad, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, and he can say all's good with the squad. I don't believe for a second, I'm sure no one does, that he thinks all's good with the squad. There's a clear case here of Liverpool should have done something in January. They absolutely,
January
the first coming, I know they did, and they did Gakpo, of course. And you could make a case for doing something in the forward line and something in midfield. Now, I got asked on a show a while ago, if I had to choose, I think Harry has asked me, I said, well, I'd go for midfield. But you could have made a case for the forward line, I get that. But they had to do two. If you're a serious football club, you talk about them being a super club, you've got to do two. You've just got to do two. What frustrates me with some of this is that I think you'll look back on the manager's tenure and you'll go, they've left two or three on the table. They've left two or three big trophies on the table by not being front foot enough. And I don't think for one second the manager's sitting there happy with his lot. We know his character, and people might say, well, he should be challenging them, he should be calling them out. We've seen that before. That doesn't necessarily end well when you start doing that to owners. So he's got to manage that relationship. And I think broadly speaking, he's got a pretty good relationship with them and he'll be respectful of that. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. He's probably having some fucking awkward conversations with them. Well, that's it. Who with? And we've talked about that before as well. Who's he having them with now? Because the structure behind the scenes is a bit of a mess. So that doesn't help him. Of course it doesn't. But no, without going on about the same thing again, Liverpool had to be doing something that first week of January. They not only saw them bring a forward and if they could, and they've done that, but they had to, they absolutely had to invest in the middle of the park, and they failed to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting that just with you talking about Wolves and, you know, that coming up as a thing. So we've played them, I just looked it up then, we've played them 10 times since the turn of 2019
like
in various competitions. So, well, yeah, well, but we've beaten them 8 times. Only lost once, which was back in January 2019. Drawn with them once.
Which was the FA Cup game third
round
of the season.
Game, yeah, exactly. And we've beaten them 8 other times. And obviously we all know Everton just as a concept. The extent to which these next two matches, presuming that there aren't any others dropped in, you know, in and around them, what this tells us about where we're at is ginormous. I think it's ginormous because how much it will highlight the error of not going into the transfer market, of the mistake. I mean, I haven't got a clue, but I did read that the business of, you know, all's good with the squad wasn't true. That was just dropped into the quote by the person who tweeted
it
out.
Oh, right, so there was no...
Somebody said,
by
the way...
He did say we weren't going to sign anyone.
Yeah, he did say that. Right, that's definitely true, but apparently that bit of all's good with the squad, no one else heard him say it. So apparently, again, I don't know. I haven't actually done the research on it, but that's what somebody reliable said. But regardless,
but he has said things like that
exactly
earlier in the window and stuff.
He has said it. He's, you know, we can all go back to the conversation he had with you, Neil, where he was talking about the midfielders and how, you know, which sort of midfielder do you want me to buy?
He said the opposite of that though since, and then he said the opposite of that again,
He's flip flopped on it.
But because you can't, I don't see a world in which you're playing an 18 year old back to back games. But I think it's 3 games in a row. I think he's the first 18-year-old to play 3 games in a row or something like that. There's no world in which you can do that with a player who basically they plucked from the youth team. It's not like it doesn't feel like there was a big plan to bring, you know, he's the reason we don't need to make any signings. It doesn't feel like that. You can't play him 3 games in a row. Drop your captain. Drop, you know, the DM who, as you said, Neil, was such an influential person all the time, and bring in Naby Keita, who he's left in the cold for so long, you know, and then he's brought him back into the starting lineup. You don't do all that if all's well with your midfield, if you're totally happy with what's going on with the midfield. And there are loads of conversations about, you know, oh, well, you know, it's all about Jude Bellingham, and, you know, the feeling is that's all stitched up. It has to be because they're just putting far too much on him for him not to be relatively certain he's going to come in the summer. And, you know, well, if we brought somebody else in, maybe that'd impact Jude Bellingham. Jude Bellingham isn't solving this midfield crisis on his own. It's just not. We need 2-3 midfielders, and this is what they've left themselves to do time and time again. I think we can have loads of conversations about the owners, and I think everyone would like them to spend more money. But the manager has put himself in this situation. It isn't totally, you know, made up that we're in this situation now because of the owners, and that the manager would be going and spending 250 million left, right and centre every transfer window if he could. He doesn't want to be at Chelsea. We saw him turn down Manchester United because it was, what did he say? It was like a dreamland or whatever it was, you know, years ago.
Disneyland, yeah.
He doesn't want that. He wants and he said, he's come out and said before, he wants a tight-knit squad. That's all totally fine. No one would object to that. No one would have a problem with it. But if you're going to have a tight-knit squad, then you need to have players who can play game after game after game. And the Naby Keita thing, I'd start him at Wolves, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't fit. Like he seemed to hold his hamstring at one point during the game as he was playing. Then he was subbed about 5 minutes later. Not one person who has ever watched Liverpool would be shocked if news came out that Naby Keita couldn't play against Wolves. And that's the prop. That's the situation we've put ourselves in. And the manager, I think, has put himself in by having too much faith in too many people. He is a really positive person. He's far more positive than I'll ever be. And I think he always looks on the best possible, you know, the best case scenario. I'm a worst case scenario sort of person. And I would have absolutely done more to get ourselves in a better situation for the worst case scenario, because we're seeing it play out now, just like we saw it with the defenders a few years ago. And I think in some ways, us making top four when we basically had competition winners playing at centre back, it has sort of justified
you know, don't worry about the midfield this season, we'll figure it out, we'll work something out. Like, if we hadn't made top four then, maybe they'd be quicker to spend money on the midfield this time around to make sure we get top four. Because not, I do genuinely believe that we're going to get Jude Bellingham, because I think it's sort of stitched up, basically. I think it's done, I think it's sorted. That is my honest belief. But missing out on the Champions League would still be ginormous, even if Bellingham signed in the summer, because as somebody said on one of the shows, there are two different lists. There's one list for if we make the top four and one list if we don't. So the quality of play that we're going to be able to bring in if we don't get the top four is lower than if we do make it. It's going to be huge. We need to do it, and they need to spend, and it's wild that they're not going to.
I think we're in a weird position where we showed yesterday that we could swap out an entire midfield for another midfield. So in terms of numbers, and we still had another midfielder sitting on the bench, in terms of numbers, we appear okay. We started the season with, I think, 8 or 9 midfielders. Should have been okay. Obviously, you know, we know about the injuries that there were to all them. We need to go out and buy a midfielder. We needed to buy a midfielder. But who the hell do you buy? Because in a world where Caicedo has just had, Arsenal just put in an offer for Caicedo for 70 million, and Brighton have gone, nah. So what are you going to do? You know, if we've got Bellingham for next summer, which we believe we have, you know, I believe that we have Bellingham sourced out. I believe that, because I believe that the long-term planning is there and has been for 3 years. But who do we buy? Because if you buy Bellingham for 120 to 150 million, you can't spend 100 million on Caicedo. Now, Thuram, everyone's talking about
loads of footballers, though,
Ian. There are lots of footballers. Yeah. So,
but it's not a finite resource, you know what I mean?
It's not like
coal in the north.
No. But who is it that we're going for? Because we don't seem interested in anybody else. So there's no other links. It's neglectful that we haven't got another midfielder in, because we do need three midfielders, because we're losing three midfielders.
Okay, thought experiments. And this is only a thought experiment, by the way, listeners, but it's the one I've used all the way through. I used it last summer as well. Would you take Sander Berg?
Oh, God, yeah.
Big Sanders looks like he's going to move.
But right now?
Would you take Sander Berg?
When Sander Berg went to Sheffield, we all went, how have they got him?
Did we?
Yeah.
Well,
he was linked.
I mean, we was doing a lot of work there for you.
I must have missed that out, to be fair.
But he was linked with a lot of bigger clubs.
He was.
But listen, I understand the question, and
it's a thought experiment.
I've said before about, you know, when you're doing stuff in January when things aren't going well, it's never great, but you've got to start somewhere. It just comes back to the summer, and in the summer you're not doing Sander Berg. You're just not. I'm not anyway, personally. You might. I know you love him, but I don't love him.
No. This is overstated. I don't love him. I love the fact that he's 6'5" and he plays centre mid.
Go for a pipe.
And it's more the idea of, he's a good marker of, when people say just do a midfielder, my response is, so would you do Sander Berg? And if you're saying just do a midfielder, and if you're also saying footballers exist and the manager will make them better and so on and so forth, would you do Sander Berg? That's all it is. It's a thought experiment.
But context is important, though, isn't it? So if you were bringing in two belters in the summer and he's your third one, I think a lot of people go, well, you can't bring three belters in. You've got to cut your cloth somewhere. So I think people are more accepting. But if suddenly Sander Berg walks through the door now, listen, you might take it because it's another body. But I think that you just look at Liverpool and go, how fucking disorganised and how kind of not on the ball.
Would you take Charles Paulinho?
Maybe.
Because Fulham might buy Berg and then Paulinho might be available.
Neil, I just think, I look
would
at
you have Paulinho in the summer now in hindsight? 15 million.
I just look at it and go, in the summer, we can talk about the manager flip-flopping. They end up getting Arthur Melo. And it's been an absolute waste of everyone's time. So it shows you they felt like they needed one, despite, obviously, they wanted too many, didn't get him, and then nothing happens, and all of a sudden, how do you end up with Arthur Melo? It's bananas. Something isn't happening. And we can talk about the manager being too loyal, and maybe he is too loyal at times, but it might be a case of he's loyal because he knows he's not going to get what he wants, and that's also a problem. And we'll never know the answer to that, because he's probably not going to come out and tell us. And there may be signs where you think, well, he has been a little bit loyal there. By the way, loyalty can be a good thing, because if it wasn't, he could have fucked off by now. So you've got to be clear on loyalty. It is important to have it. I think one or two times maybe he is a little bit too loyal. I absolutely take that point. But there also might be a thing where if they're not going to back him, if they're not going to bring in someone else, he's got to demonstrate loyalty, because otherwise he's shafting the lads who are there. So it's a difficult balancing act, and we probably don't know the true answer to it. But just be more prepared. Just be more planned in the summer.
You're taking Big Sander?
Yeah, why not?
You're taking Big Sander?
I'll take you, Neil, in the middle of the park, to be honest.
I think I agree with what Ian Salmon said before. I think Fabinho's done. I think he's done. I don't think there's really any coming back from it. So the question then in my mind becomes, is Sanderberg better than the current iteration of Fabinho? And the answer to that is yes. You know, I know it's different positions and all that sort of thing, but in terms of a body in the middle of the park, then the answer becomes yes. And from what the limited amount that I know about him, I think he's also more physically robust than Naby Keita. So the answer becomes yes, he's better than...
Apparently Fabinho. He's not.
Oh, well, he's had a few injuries.
Apparently he's injured.
All right, so maybe not then. But so offer me somebody of his level that will cost his money, that is physically robust, and I'll take him, because they're going to be better than the players we've currently got in the middle. The Artemelo thing, as you say, it's nice when you remember him, a little bit like watching the FA Cup and seeing Rian Brewster and being like, oh yeah, he was going to be the next Raheem Sterling, wasn't he? Whatever. But, you know, like, it's a little bit like that. You remember things like, oh, that's nice. Maybe Artemelo is going to be an absolute world beater, and we're going to see it in the remainder of the season. He comes in and is unbelievable. But it's negligence what's going on at the club at the moment. And I don't know how we get back from the ledge. We will, because, you know, the manager's brilliant. But it's really worrying at the moment. And so, yes, I would take a midfielder who can get on the pitch and perform better than the ones we've got at the moment.
Thank you very much indeed, Adam Smith, Ian Salmon and Ian Ryan, Andy Heaton producing, Jordan Singleton doing the images if you watch this as a video on YouTube in the background. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.